Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Dr. Stephen Meyer was recently on the Rick Hamada Show in Hawaii, where he discussed the origin of life and how his book, Signature in the Cell, addresses the critical question that has stumped everyone. Where did the first information come from? Be sure to visit signatureinthecell.com and click on News for updates and other interviews and public appearances like this one featuring Dr. Meyer. That's signatureinthecell.com.
There is no more basic fundamental question that when ruminating over our lives as human beings is, of course, the origin of the first life. We are joined by Dr. Stephen Meyer this morning. And Dr. Meyer, first of all, thank you very much for being with us. Aloha and good morning to you.
Hello.
Thank you very much for being with us. Where are you joining us from today,
sir? I am Seattle, Washington.
Oh, it's gorgeous there. I love Seattle.
We're having a nice summer.
Wow, fantastic. My wife just returned. She said the same thing. It was just splendid. Tell us a little bit about yourself, sir, would you mind?
Well, I'm a scientist and also a philosopher. I did some work initially in the oil industry and then went off to England and studied this question, the origin of life, and I did my doctoral work and been working on a book about this topic for quite some time, and I just finally got it done.
Fantastic. How long of a process was it for you?
Well, it's embarrassing, actually, but the idea for the project was hatched when my eldest son was one in 1992, and he was with me last week in Washington, D.C., while we were doing some promotional events as working as my assistant, and he's 18, so you know, it took a while, but the actual writing was last 20 months or so.
What compelled you to examine what has got to be the most complex, yet most, in some cases, even frustrating topic to try and make a determination of?
Well, I started out in a field of science that was doing information processing. I was a geophysicist working for in the oil industry doing something called digital signal processing, an incredibly practical form of science. The outcome is you find oil, you earn the company money.
Mm-hmm.
But a conference came to our town when I was a young scientist that was addressing this fundamental question of the origin of life as well as the origin of the universe. I got just fascinated with the intersection of science and these big philosophical questions. And I was also kind of shocked to find out that the scientists who were discussing the origin of life, and these were people that were real leaders in the field, were very candid about the fact that we had no evolutionary explanation for the origin of how life first began. It was a question that Darwin didn't address. There were scientists who had tried to address it over the ensuing decades, and no satisfactory answer was forthcoming, and that's still the case. And what really fascinated me about it was that there was the critical question that had stumped everybody was the origin of the information, the digital code that's stored along the spine of the DNA molecule. And Bill Gates says that DNA is like a software program, only much more complex than any we've ever created. And as I learned more about the discussions that scientists were having about the origin of life, this was the critical question that was creating an impasse in the field. How do you get chemistry to create code? And no one's been able to figure that out. And instead, as I've studied this more, it's become really clear that we do know something about what creates code, what creates information, whether we see information in a hieroglyphic inscription or in a newspaper headline or in a section of digital code and software, that information always comes from an intelligent source. So when we find information in the DNA molecule, it seems to point decisively to an intelligent design or intelligent source of some kind. And everything that we've learned in this, the field of prebiotic chemistry, as it's called, has kind of reinforced that, because every attempt that scientists make to try to get chemistry to arrange itself into information-rich sequences always involves the experimenter doing the critical work. Actually, the intelligence of the experimenter is guiding the outcome, and so it seems like what we're really simulating is the need for intelligence, which just reconfirms our ordinary experience of how information arises as well.
It appears that our daily lives are simply a microcosm or a reflection of what the greater action has been.
That's very well said. That's exactly right. And the rule in one of the things that I got fascinated with is there, it was in some of the scientists that were first grappling with this problem back in the mid-'80s had this strong intuition that information was something that comes from mind, not from a material process. But I wanted to find out if that intuition could be cashed out as a rigorous scientific argument or a rigorous scientific case. And I began in my graduate studies. I went back to the master's. I've studied Darwin and the way he investigated events in the remote past. It turns out he developed a very rigorous scientific method, and he had gotten that from one of his mentors, a geologist, Charles Lyell. And I kind of, as I was studying that, I came across, they had a rule of reasoning that made perfect sense to me. It was that if you're trying to explain something in the remote past, you want to invoke a cause which is known to produce the effect in question. And they had a way of talking about that. Lyell said we should be looking for causes now in operation. And I thought to myself, what is the cause now in operation that produces digital code, that produces information? Mm-hmm. And I realized there's only one, and it's intelligence. And so the odd, perhaps the ironic thing about my book is that in arguing for intelligent design, I'm actually using the same method of scientific reasoning that Charles Darwin himself used. And I kind of like to think that if Darwin knew what we know now, applying his same method of reasoning, he'd come to the conclusion that I'm coming to and that other scientists are coming to, that there really is evidence of design in biology.
And I think it's definitely reflected in the title, of course, Signature in the Cell. When is the book available? Is it out and available now?
It just was released last week.
Oh, and, wonderful.
So it's, it's just come out, and we're having a lot of fun talking to folks like you about it, and it's been great.
Well, we appreciate it greatly. Signature in the Cell. I would assume that we'd be able to go to Amazon here at home, yeah?
Yeah, it's on Amazon, exactly right. And it's in bookstores, too, you know, the usual suspects. And I also have a website for the book that's got video clips and lectures and various other materials, the reviews and comments that have been coming in. And that's signatureinthecell.com. But the Amazon's a great place to find it if nowhere else.
You're really tackling some pretty heady stuff here. I think that's very obvious. And when we talk about intelligent design, there's an assertion that life itself is best explained by intelligent cause rather than, as you said with Darwin, natural selection. It's interesting in your conversations. What have you encountered when you try to apply scientific reasoning and also theory and also process to what many believe to be simply, you know, assigned to the God of Christianity as being responsible for the creation of all things?
Well, you know, there are some people that want to just reject the conclusion that there was some kind of designing intelligence behind life. They want to reject it out of hand, and they'll label the conclusion rather than really grappling with the reasoning. They'll say it's not science. And yet, as I mentioned, I very scrupulously followed the exact scientific method that Darwin himself pioneered. So if my method of reasoning is unscientific, then you'd have to say that Darwin's was as well. In fact, I think both approaches are scientific. It's just we're coming to a different conclusion now based on new evidence. Hmm. Other people want to dismiss it out of hand by saying it's religion. But the argument is based on scientific discoveries, on the digital code in DNA. And as I show in the book, it's not just what we've known since the time of Watson and Crick in 1953. It's all the new discoveries about the way the genome is structured and organized. There's just like on our computers, we have files within folders and folders within superfolders. The information in DNA is organized the same way. Mm-hmm. We have an error correction device in our computers. We call them spell checks. Similar thing going on inside the cell. The information processing system that's involved in expressing and reading the information in DNA is just as fascinating as the information in DNA itself, and it also bears the hallmarks of intelligent design. So we like to say that the argument is based on scientific evidence, but it may have larger theistic implications. It's friendly to belief in God, but it's not by itself a proof of God's existence, but it implies that there's some kind of designing intelligence, and then you know, each person has to kind of reason that through as to who they think the most likely candidate to be the designer is, you know. So,
We're talking with Dr. Stephen Meyer. It's a fascinating book, as you can tell, just by the conversation. Find your copy all over our state, of course, and also online. Signatureinthecell.com would be a great destination for you as well. I want to jump to a sidebar, if you wouldn't mind, Doctor, and that is the legality in the discussion of intelligent design. Recalling a case back in the late 80s where this was advanced in a Supreme Court decision, and it pertains to separation of church and state. How would the findings that you've, or your conclusions, would it have any net effect on the legality, the legal discussions, and specifically the net effect to curriculum? Things are being taught in the schools.
You know, it's really interesting. I've just written a piece about Thomas Jefferson and his view of the basis of human rights in our country. And he was a strong advocate of intelligent design as revealed not by religion but by reason. He was an agrarian, a farmer, a gentleman scientist, and he had lots of arguments for design based on the things in the planetary system and based on the way life is put together. So he argued that that was a conclusion of reason based on public evidence. So you didn't require revealed religion for that. Mm-hmm. Because he believed that there was evidence of intelligent design, he believed there must be some kind of creator, and therefore that our rights as humans were based on a special endowment of a creator which could be known by reason alone. And so it's very odd now for people to say that if you talk about intelligent design in the schools, you're violating you're violating Jefferson's idea of church and state separation, when he was very explicit himself that if a conclusion of a creator or designer is based on public evidence, that it could become the foundation of our whole system of inalienable rights that are protected by law.
Yeah, I always use this opportunity to remind folks that the separation of church and state not codified in any governmental document. It was an expression to a letter to the Danbury Baptists back in the day. So I went, again, just I always take that opportunity to remind
absolutely.
Folks.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's been misinterpreted.
Right.
But even Jefferson, who was the source of the phrase, was quite explicitly an advocate of the idea of intelligent design and believed it was the whole basis of our protections of religious and other forms of liberty.
Dr. Stephen Meyer, I got to run, but I got to tell you, I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I wish you all the best with Signature in the Cell. And I'm urging all of our friends, of course, to go to our local bookstores. As you said, I like that, the usual suspects, Barnes & Noble, et cetera, and go online to signatureinthecell.com. What's next for you, Doctor?
Well, I actually hope to get a little rest at some point, but I got another month or so of doing this kind of thing. But turns out my parents spend about half the year in the good state of Hawaii, and we're kind of impressed with the intelligent design of tropical fish. So I'd like to spend some time underwater looking at them. All those beautiful paintings on fish. There's an aesthetic design in nature as well as a digital code.
Amen. Well put. You'll have to examine the humu humu nuku nuku apu a'a.
That's my favorite one, those triggerfish. They're awesome, aren't they?
They're fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Dr. Stephen Meyer, once again, log on to signatureinthecell.com. Fascinating conversation, sir, and congratulations on such a work.
Oh, thank you, and thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
That's our pleasure. Take care.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Dr. Stephen Meyer with thoughtful conversation for you on this Aloha Tuesday. It is the Rick Amata program.